The information discussed on Keep Antiquing is not intended to be a substitute for an in-person appraisal of an item. Exact pricing can only come from actual viewing. WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management disclaim responsibility for any incorrect estimates relating to the misinterpretation or misapplication of information given on this program.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Frank Farmer Luma Show, also known as Keep Antiquing, here on WMKV and WHS, both part of the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And we want to thank you all for listening and supporting public radio. And Mike, so you were talking before the show started. You had a wonderful Thanksgiving.
It was very nice. Yes, it was.
You had a double heading.
Yes, we had two Thanksgivings.
Okay. Thank you for asking. Mine was
terrific. How was yours, Frank?
Mine was terrific.
Did you use your china?
No. Well, no. The plates were being used at Heritage Village in Sharon Woods. Remember, we had that talk about that meal?
Yeah.
Well, I helped serve another. We have a terrific guest in the studio, Andrew Walsh, and his book I found at the public library. Andrew, big display, called Lost Dayton, Ohio. Now, I want you to thank you for coming down here today, and I want you to know I had to wait a month on the waiting list to get your book. That's how popular it is.
Great. Well, thanks for having me. Looking forward to having
It's published by History Press. Mm-hmm. Tell us where we can get it. Everywhere?
So it definitely is at your local library, and since I work as a librarian, I always promote
that. I thought
that.
You'd like that.
Yes.
Yeah, we like librarian. Now, tell us where you work as a librarian.
I work at Sinclair Community College, which is the main campus is right in downtown Dayton.
Okay, so this is right up your alley. Now, excuse my ignorance. Are you a reference librarian?
I am. So at our school, there's a fairly small staff, so we all do a little bit of everything. So
yeah.
General reference. We specialize in just a few different departments each.
Well, first of all, tell us a little bit about your college, because that's wonderful to, you know, tell us a little bit about that.
So it's very large, urban community college. We do have a couple of satellite campuses, including one down in Mason, closer to mm-hmm. this area. But we recently opened up a brand new health sciences center, so that's
good.
One area we're strong in. We do a lot in aviation, and particularly unmanned aerial systems is another area that we really focus on, so a lot of interesting different fields.
I didn't mean to put that by saying small college. That's just I didn't mean that the way it came off. It's this man is very enthusiastic. I love it. And this book is called Lost Dayton, Ohio. And so you're concentrating on buildings that have been destroyed and everything, and some that are waiting to be restored?
Yes. Yeah, so I do use Lost in a couple different ways. So one, the most obvious way would be buildings that are completely demolished. So
mm-hmm.
I focus on quite a few of those, kind of individual gems that we've unfortunately lost. Like on the cover, there's an image of the old steel high school, which was right downtown by the river. Which
that is just
was a
beautiful. Would I be loosely incorrect or correct to say that it's sort of Richardsonian?
I believe so. I'm not an architectural expert.
I didn't mean that. I think it sort of looks like, Mike will tell me. Mike, doesn't that sort of look like our city hall?
It does, yeah.
Except
absolutely.
That was Samuel Hannaford,
right.
But looking like Richard. And they tore that baby down, didn't they?
They did. So that's one sense of the word lost. I also focus on even larger areas that have been lost, so a few neighborhoods that have just been wiped off the map for a variety of reasons.
You want to tell us? Well, you know, in Cincinnati, I guess, wouldn't you think, Mike, the West End?
Yeah, when the I-75 came mm-hmm. through, and when I-71 was built through Evanston, that part of that got torn down.
That was one of the things I found so enjoyable about your book, about some areas that were wiped off. What were some of them in Dayton?
So one that I thought was especially interesting and actually provided some of the spark for the book in the first place was an old neighborhood called the Haymarket. And I became interested in that because it was where my first apartment was. And I settled into an area that was just right out on the edge of downtown. So the Oregon District is kind of the most well-known neighborhood in Dayton, most likely, and kind of the trendy spot today.
Let's start with the positive. Oregon District. So you've been there, Mike? Incredible.
I think I know which area.
Incredible.
That is.
So it's just right to the southeast part of downtown, slightly outside of the Central Business District.
So
I live just a couple blocks off the edge of that.
Mm-hmm.
But my area, compared to the Oregon District, which is quite dense and mm-hmm. very old, beautiful buildings, I was in a modern apartment tower surrounded by all this green space and trees, mm-hmm. and then nearby there were these single-story, you know, newer-looking buildings. So I started to wonder what had happened to this area so close to this cool other old neighborhood. And then on the other side of it, there was St. Anne's Hill, which is another very cool east side
too.
Neighborhood that's very old in Dayton. So it was this kind of black hole in the middle that something must have happened. So that kind of got me going to try to see what that story was.
And tell us about that story. When was it?
It was a story of urban renewal, so it would be kind of similar to the West End here mm-hmm. in Cincinnati.
When was that? I forget. When was that destroyed?
Mainly was going on in the 60s.
60s. Is that where the paint store was that you write about here, or is that in the Oregon District, the paint store?
So today there's a paint store.
That survived part of the building?
It's actually not an old building.
Oh.
There just is like a Sherwin-Williams in that middle area, but there is the Lowe Brothers Paint Company. That was closer to downtown.
Okay.
They occupied quite a few buildings.
I was trying to show off that I remembered everything in your beautiful book. So they tore that down in the 60s?
They did, yeah. So it was an episode of designated area of blight, even though there were still quite a few people still living there mm-hmm. happily, and there were businesses that were thriving, but there was a lot of federal money out there for these radical, what they would say were improvement projects at the time.
I know. I think the West End, and you know, when I was a kid in St. Louis, there was this area called the Mill Creek mm-hmm. area, like Cincinnati,
mm-hmm.
and my uncle and aunt had a business near there, and they had all these beautiful, like Dayton Street in here,
mm-hmm.
and then they put up these townhouses, and 20 years later they tore those down. Have you been to St. Louis?
A couple times. Yeah.
I think they've done a lousy job on preserving everything, and that was just a terrific city, and they've destroyed mm-hmm. so much. Do you think I always wanted to justify, do you think because we were a young country and after World War II, we really didn't know what we were doing trying to restore things, and I think it was done with the best intentions, or am I wrong about that? What do you think, Andrew?
I think so. I mean, I think the spirit has always been to have wide open land and spaces. So I think when we were kind of building these, crowded cities that sort of looked like the old world in a way, something about the American spirit, I think, was,
new.
Yeah, the new. And a lot of it was well-intentioned, I think. They were citing a lot of, safety and reasons why we'd want to be around nature instead of in a crowded tenement. So there's certainly some truth there. There were certainly some dangerous and overcrowded conditions. Mm-hmm. But I think what we maybe didn't realize was that isolating people from one another and taking these complete self-sufficient neighborhoods where you could, walk to school, you could mm-hmm. walk to mm-hmm. your job, and we're putting in, we mentioned highway construction before.
Yeah.
So in Dayton, we obviously have 75 slicing through things, too, and an I-35 going
you
the,
bring that
US
up
35
in here,
going
don't
the
you,
other
about
way.
About I-75 destroying neighborhoods and
yes,
stuff?
Yes, so that cut through. What that sort of did, actually, the west end of Dayton, too, was an area that is very much lost right across the river, and I-75 does kind of cut that off.
And that's sort of a little bit south of the Art Museum. Is that the right district?
Yeah, so if you take the Art Institute and you go a little farther mm-hmm. south, that would get into 3rd Street is the Wright-Dunbar district you mentioned, and then a little farther south of that, there was actually a once thriving it was kind of the center of African American culture centered on West 5th Street.
Oh, you write
so
about that.
So I have a chapter on that with two great old theaters, which unfortunately have both been lost. And there are a lot of factors towards that.
We are having a wonderful conversation with Andrew Walsh. He is the author of Lost Dayton, Ohio. And you can get his books anywhere on the Internet, the History Press. And it's at the, and I better say because you like that, the public libraries. If you'd like to call us and ask Andrew Walsh a question, call us at 772-9658 or toll free 877-772-968. And our last four digits are the same as our call letters, WMKV. And I'm Frank Farmer Loomis, and we'll be right back. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to the Frank Farmer Loomis Show here on WMKV. And, Mike, look up at the skylight there now. It's almost dark, isn't it?
I know.
We have in our studio a young man. His name is Andrew J. Welsh. I'm going to read his introduction here. He's a writer and a librarian at Sinclair Community College in Dayton. He has published works range from scholarly articles to web content and magazine features. He posts about Dayton history and development on his website. And let me let you give the address of your website.
Sure. So the website is DaytonVistas.com.
Good name, DaytonVistas.com. And you got some upcoming appearances at the different branches of the Dayton Public Library?
I do, yes. So starting with their history series in the spring, which will start in January, mm-hmm. I'm going to have a few events at the different branches. So probably the best way to see those would be to just go to the Dayton Metro Library's website.
And, you know, we want to toot Dayton's horn. They got a brand new library downtown.
It's a great asset to the community. Oh. I go there all the time, and, you know, it's got...
Oh, there's a lot of things.
All sorts of things.
I was thinking that could you tell us a little bit about the Oregon District and St. Anne's Hill, which is off of Wayne, is that right, going up the hill? No?
So St. Anne's Hill would be...
I'm wrong, I can tell.
If you're on Wayne, you'd take 5th farther east.
Okay.
So it's right in the same area.
Okay.
So...
And tell us about the Oregon District. Was it always well-maintained?
No. So the Oregon District... as I explained in one of the chapters in the book, the second chapter. the original plan, so I mentioned before the break, the Haymarket neighborhood, which was in just a bit east of the Oregon District and
they
was
have a
demolished.
Bronze plaque because you lived there, right, in the Haymarket District?
There's not a plaque there.
No.
It actually has been quite a few people have forgotten or never even knew it was there.
No, I meant a plaque about you living there.
About me living there, no.
Never mind, that was a bad joke.
There are a couple plaques in the Oregon
Baker's
District.
Baker's Hardware Building the Oregon District.
So the Oregon District would be considered the oldest neighborhood still surviving.
Mm-hmm.
So it has housing stock dating back to 1840s and 50s.
Beautiful.
And then the commercial district right there on 5th Street is what today you would probably say is the most vibrant part of Dayton city core, so with restaurants, bars, small shops. So it's a very pleasant experience, but back in the 1970s, the Oregon District was really the worst slum in the city. So just about all of the beautiful homes were subdivided into rooming houses.
Mm-hmm.
So there were just tons of people crammed into all these makeshift apartments, and there were mainly absentee landlords who were not maintaining the properties. So it was a really rough area. One thing to keep in mind as to how that would have come about is the Great Flood of 1913.
Oh, that's in here.
Which actually comes up in many chapters.
Right.
In the book, because that's such a constant theme because it really ravaged the downtown and the surrounding neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really that flood in 1913 that set the Oregon District kind of on a path of not great times. So right there in the 70s, what we saw to revitalize the district wasn't some... you know, grand policy or major funding, but it was really just a spirit of
one
grassroots
person after another, right?
So there were these urban pioneers who were buying up those old dilapidated homes and restoring them, and it was certainly an adventure for those first few, and I think it took a lot of bravery and excitement to try to pull that off.
I guess we could sort of call that a flat Mount Adams of Dayton, couldn't we? In Cincinnati terms, couldn't we sort of say it's like the Mount Adams of Dayton, or Oregon District is similar to Mount Adams here. I think over the Rhine, maybe. You think that might be?
It would probably be the closest we would have, obviously much smaller in scope.
But it's a beautiful neighborhood.
But it's, yeah.
And if I remember, a client was telling me, it's kind of, isn't it sort of landlocked for expansion or something?
So... We mentioned U.S. 35, the highway,
a little bit before,
that's the southern boundary of it.
Okay, the southern. Okay.
So what you get is one of the cross streets off of 5th in the Oregon District is Brown Street, and then that runs into 35.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another Brown Street down at the University of Dayton campus, and that's the main commercial strip down there with all the restaurants and stuff for the students.
Mm-hmm.
So today it really seems like two different streets, but before the urban renewal and the highway construction, it was one of the major thoroughfares of Dayton that went all the way down uninterrupted. So that's that's one area that's changed quite a bit, and it is landlocked on the other sides too.
Do you think Dorothy Lane will ever open a branch in the Oregon district?
So that's one thing I would say. So I do live in the Oregon
district, know.
And it's great, but what we do sort of lack are the amenities for the people who live there. So
that's
a major attraction
asking,
for suburbanites and people from anywhere, which is great, and I'm glad they're coming, but I still think a little more push if we get a few more, you know, residents in the nearby neighborhoods and core, we'll start to see more of things like a grocery store.
It's a beautiful area. I love it. And I don't laugh at my ignorance. When I was teaching a couple of classes at UC University, we went up to Dayton with the Wright brothers and everything. Mm-hmm. And I just loved learning about Paul Dunbar, mm-hmm. Paul Lawrence Dunbar, and the Wright Dunbar district. I just think that's a great story. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because you said it's getting revitalized.
Sure. So this is back over on the west side of Dayton.
Across the river.
So an area that I think even a lot of Daytonians don't know much about because it's gone through some really tough times. There's been a ton lost. So I think I mentioned before the old entertainment district on West 5th Street is basically completely gone. The couple theaters I write about in the book have vanished. But the main commercial strip that's still there is West 3rd Street. And a couple of the highlights there are the different buildings that make up the National Historic Park for the aviation. So that includes the Wright Brothers Museums that are over there. It actually includes their only original bicycle shop that's still standing on its original location.
And you help out there.
So I do some volunteering there.
I bet you do a great job.
And then they have a more modern kind of visitor center that they built, which is connected to an old building on the corner of West 3rd Street and William Street, which is where they had their original printing business. So the Wright brothers, before they did airplanes, they did bicycles. And before they did bicycles, they were printers.
And everybody, it's run by the National Park Service.
Yes.
They do that movie, the 20-minute movie, is terrific to watch in the little auditorium there.
So that all became a national park. It was very fortunate because they had the connection to the Wright brothers had kind of been forgotten, and they realized that this old cycle shop was a Wright brothers shop. I think someone found an old photograph in a magazine. Someone wrote a magazine article about a photograph they had found somewhere else, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And that set things in motion. This was in the 80s. Mm. And that whole commercial strip that you still find today on West 3rd Street had been slated for demolition. So we could have lost basically all of that because it was getting to such a point where developers or city officials figured that just starting new with vacant land would be the only way to get development.
Thank God
to
it was saved. Huh?
So that was saved. But interestingly, the Dunbar House, which you
tell
mentioned.
Tell us about him.
So that
he
predates,
is so cool. He was best buds with the Wright brothers.
Mm-hmm. So that predates. So he was classmates with Orville Wright. The printmaking business that they were doing, they published some of his early work and there was a...
Take a cookie.
Oh, great.
Thank you, Mary. Mike?
Yes, please.
Oh, I get the
no,
last...
No, wait. I get to pick my own.
Oh, Mary. Thank you,
David. This is good.
All right. Sorry for the interruption.
Oh, no. Interruption for a cookie.
But
it's fine by me.
Orville and Wilbur would approve, and so would Mr. Dunbar.
Mm-hmm.
This is such a great story about the three of them.
Right, and then with the Dunbar House, that actually predates all of the...
Oh, you can't hear us?
Yeah, looks like,
we're talking about the Dunbar. Mike, what's going on here, Mike? There you go.
Let's try that again. There we go. I'm
oh,
back.
Oh, this guy is brilliant.
We got loose wires here.
You are the best guest I've ever had. You know when the
wires.
Microphone's not. Well, what's wrong, Mike?
We have loose wires, Frank.
Well, I'm wired enough to. Anyway, go ahead. I love this. Because it's just a neat story, isn't it?
Right. So I was just saying in the 80s was when this the Wright Cycle Shop was rediscovered and that set in motion the creation of the National Park. But the Dunbar House had been a state memorial, I believe, all the way back in 1938, which it was the first state memorial to honor an African-American.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a home that's just a couple blocks away from the other Wright Brothers museums in that neighborhood. So it's just a quick trip up there. And it was a home that he had built for his mother in the early 1900s, and unfortunately, so Paul Ernst Dunbar died very young.
He had pneumonia.
It was tuberculosis.
It was even worse.
What he did was he came back to Dayton when he was diagnosed and lived in the home with his mother and passed away just a couple years later.
Am I wrong, 1919-ish or something like that?
He passed away in 1906.
Oh, God, I'm way off. Okay.
And then his mother lived on for several decades in the home, and when she passed away in the 30s, the house was acquired by the State Historical Society and turned into a museum, which was very early for that kind of thing.
Yeah, was one of the trailblazers. Mm-hmm. Listen, everybody, you need to see this house because, Andrew, it's a time frame. Everything in that house is original. So you have, if I remember correctly, the dueling wallpapers and everything like that.
Oh, it's very well preserved.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And even the original plumbing works in it. Mm-hmm. It's like a sort of like a frame row house, a shotgun sort of frame, isn't it? The house, or am I wrong? It's been a while since I've been. Long, deep skidding house, isn't it, or not? I think. So what do you think about, so they're revitalizing, and then they built a reconstructed Wright Brothers first house, right?
So the Wright Brothers home, there's just a small kind of a monument and a little version of it where it actually stood, which is on Hawthorne Street, which is just a couple blocks down from where the main visitor center is today.
Mm-hmm.
Then the other really cool museum with Wright Brothers stuff is Carillon Historical Park.
Oh, tell us about that.
So that has not only a museum to the Wright Brothers, it has the real Wright Flyer 3 that they flew. It has many of Dayton's other earlier buildings, including the Deeds Barn. So another chapter of my book was the Delco Company.
Oh, I'll look that up. Okay.
Which was Edward Deeds and Charles Kettering, who are big names in Dayton. And there's many of their... lots of information about them. NCR, also probably
well,
being,
was a hu- what,
probably
was
being
the,
Dayton's what, biggest invention of the cash register and,
well,
and the biggest company.
Viewpoint, was it called Gem City?
Dayton is called the Gem City.
It had lots of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Dayton was really this hotbed of innovation back then. And I do cover the companies of Delco and NCR in the book. NCR left Dayton in 2009, and their whole old corporate campus of factory buildings have all been demolished. But on a more positive note, Delco, if you look into that company, most of their significant factories are still standing and have been converted into either apartments.
Cool.
Or a couple of them are still there awaiting possibly a new development.
Correct me if I'm wrong, didn't Hawthorne Hill, when the Wright brothers got successful, they moved up the hill there? And didn't NCR own that house and they gave it to the city of Dayton when they left? I think.
So, right. So Hawthorne Hill is a couple miles down. It's actually very close to Carillon Historical Park,
yeah.
And it's in Oakwood.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be the case.
I think it is.
That probably
is.
I
don't mean to interrupt. I want to tell you, when you're going on I-75 and you're going north or you're going south, and just when the traffic sometimes, the Carillon is to the east of I-75, and you can see it almost from the expressway, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So get off there and go see it.
And in the holiday season, they make it into a sort of a Christmas tree looking thing.
And of course, you got that wonderful art museum there, the Dayton Art Institute. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to just take a little break. When we come back, we are talking to Andrew Walsh, Lost Dayton, Ohio. And Andrew, give us your website again.
DaytonVistas.com.
When we get back, can we talk about? I think I haven't been inside, but what a magical building, the arcade building.
Yes, love to.
Okay. Thank you all for listening and supporting Public Radio. I'm Frank Farmer Lewis. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Frank Farmer Loomis, your host here on Keep Antiquing, also known as the Frank Farmer Loomis Show. And one of the things we always talk about is great architecture, and that brings us to mine, Dayton. And we're talking to Andrew Walsh of Lost Dayton. And maybe I'm probably wrong about this, but is the arcade? You taught us all about the arcade building, and maybe that's one of the most famous buildings in Dayton.
I think it would definitely be up there, and right now it's probably the most highly anticipated redevelopment.
Well, he's got good news, everybody. So I'll shut up. Tell us all when it was built and everything.
Right. So it dates back to the early 1900s, and it's actually a complex of several interconnected buildings. So it's right in the center of downtown. There's a beautiful Flemish facade on 3rd Street, which was one of the main entrances. That went all the way through to all the way through the block to 4th Street, and there's a beautiful central rotunda, which was a market house originally, and later evolved into sort of a food court and market with some different shops. And then there's several other buildings connected to it around those areas. And it went through a lot over the years, so it was built just a little bit before the Great Flood of 1913, which I mentioned a little bit before, was bad news for just about anything in downtown Dayton. So it did rebound from that, and then it started struggling again, of course, due to anything from World War II to growing suburbanization and people who were living farther and farther out, so this need for a central market was decreasing. And unfortunately, it became completely vacant by the 1990s. Mm. There were some efforts in the 80s to re-kickstart it, and there was kind of a grand reopening, but it never really picked up momentum. It also has a large residential component. There were apartments in the arcade on some of the upper floors.
Did you ever get to see an apartment?
So I was able to get in for just informal tours recently. So,
would you do me a favor? You got my email. If there's ever an opportunity, Mike and I, we both would love to come up and see it. Could we?
So they did fairly recently have a downtown housing tour, and the arcade was on the list. And I think the line was like down the block.
I can believe it.
So a lot of people interested in it.
That's wonderful. And so what's the big news?
So this isn't the first time there's been a plan for redevelopment.
Now let's be positive.
So there have been people who've bought it, pledging to restore it to its former glory. But right now we're currently in the midst of a project that really looks like it is going to happen. So the development team, there's some very good people on the job, and they've secured just a whole host of funding from diverse sources, state historic tax credits, new market tax credits, all these fancy tax credits, and then. The city made a major loan to the developers.
Good.
And just many other funding sources, including components for low-income housing tax credits and all stuff like that. So they're putting together this really complex funding puzzle, because we have to remember it's 7 to 9 interconnected buildings. That
I love that you bring that up. It's just not the arcade. Have you ever been inside of it, Mike?
I don't think I've been to one. In Cleveland has an arcade too.
Oh yeah,
but
yeah.
I think every city had one, but
we had. Yes,
ours was where Crewe Tower is.
Yeah, and that was torn down.
They tore that down.
And we got a caller here, Andrew. Also, the Central Rotunda. If you folks Google Galeries Lafayette, the department store in Paris, That reminds me of the center. Let's say hello to Tony. And Tony, will you be sure to say hello to Mike, first of all? And then please say hello to our guest, the author of Lost Dayton, Ohio, Andrew Walsh. How are you?
Hi, Mike. Hi, Andrew.
Hi. Well, you didn't expect all that, did you, Tony?
No.
Thank you for calling.
Yes. Hey, I was wondering, are there any cool old Rookwood pottery tile installations in some of these old places?
That's a good question. Has that ever come up, maybe?
That is a great question. I can't think of coming across it, but that could certainly be something to look into.
Right. That's a great idea. Tony, have you listened to the show, and this for Andrew, too, about the Monroe Building in Chicago?
Oh, yeah.
The Monroe Building, a 1917 building directly across from the Art Institute of Chicago, and it has the most incredible Rookwood lobby and everything. And that was restored a few years ago, and Frank Lloyd Wright had his first office there, too. That's a good one.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we'll work on that, Tony. That's a good idea. And, Tony, while you're on the phone here to Daniel, I think getting rid of coal heat and everything is one of the greatest things for historic preservation, because all that grime just made everything look awful, on the outside.
Yeah.
Would you like
there
to
you go.
Tony, want to ask something else to Andrew about Dayton?
Oh no. I actually install Rookwood from time to time, and actually went up to the Monroe Building to consult with union crews that installed their new floors up there.
Oh, well, now when were they installing the new floors?
When at probably 08, 09.
Was that when I'm trying to remember the nice guy's name. He was from Portland. Was it James Robertson? Was that or
yeah, Jim Robinson.
He was on the show talking about that.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's a blast. He's so much fun to work with.
Oh yeah, Mike. You probably don't remember, but he was on. Tony, give us up just because you know you asked a good question. That's a good question for Andrew here. I think sometimes we tend to overlook going into lobbies of these mm-hmm. beautiful old buildings in the Monroe.
Oh, absolutely.
Like another beautiful old lobby in Chicago, not far from there, is the Pittsfield Building. At Washington and Wabash. Did you ever go in there, Tony?
No, but when I go up there next, I'll look for it.
Yeah, it's like it's kitty corner from what used to be Marshall Field and Company. We'll leave that at that. But it's like a 40-story skyscraper. Mm. Of course, now it's dwarfed. It's a beautiful, beautiful lobby, Tony. But just tell Andrew and all of us a little bit about that lobby in the Monroe Building because it's incredible.
It's breathtaking. And it's so there's so many individual pieces,
uh-huh.
like these pillars and all. They're mm-hmm. so different. I mean, it and it's every square inch of it. That's mm-hmm. the amazing thing, from floor to ceiling.
It's a magnificent building. And is the facade of that building terracotta, or am I wrong? I'm trying to remember.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know either. But I was just looking at pictures because I love all that architecture stuff on Facebook. And that building and the one across the street from the University Club were like built 1912 or something. They were pitch black by 1920, you know.
Oh, my.
So, that's an excellent question, Tony. And
but I'm going to come up to Dayton and investigate some of these places and see what I can find.
Yeah.
Yeah, great. I think I'll look into that, too.
That's a good. Thank you, Tony, for calling.
All right. Great.
Happy holidays. Andrew, I bet. You know, that's something that wouldn't come out of the blue. Mike, what did you want to say something?
I was going to move your microphone.
Oh, thank
I
you. I'll
you
be
would.
Better at that.
Okay.
This is my first show I've ever done. that's a tough question, but, you know, I think sometimes we tend to forget to go in the lobbies of these mm-hmm. great buildings, you know.
And I think, too, even in the development side, how many projects did they just preserve the facade? And it was kind of like, well, at least we kept that. But then everything else has been altered.
I love the great point about how all these buildings are interconnected mm-hmm. on the block. And there's this lovely the commercial building that's 10 stories tall.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so that's on the opposite corner, 4th and Ludlow Streets.
Built in 19. Now, right across from the arcade, you got a spectacular building right across from the arcade. Wasn't some famous guy there or something? What's the story about that?
I'm guessing you're talking about the old courthouse.
Oh,
building.
What a treasure you got.
So that's one of Dayton's more prominent, very early buildings, 1850.
Beautiful Greek Revival.
And just some guy named Abraham Lincoln, I believe, gave a speech from its steps.
I think, I may be wrong, correct me, I think that's where he found out that he got the Republican nomination for the presidency.
That could be.
I think that's right. But that's a great building right there
downtown. Oh, it is.
You know, you've got some wonderful buildings. And when we were looking in this building, you got all. Tell us about Roberts Boulevard, because you said you live...
Oh, so that's, yeah, so there is a chapter in the book on
Roberts.
A lot of just what was sort of the vanishing residential component uh-huh. of downtown. So this is kind of on the western side of downtown. And Robert Boulevard is sort of the focus of that chapter, which was just lined with beautiful old mansions. Mm-hmm. And it, too, suffered from the Great Flood, as everything did, because that's very close to the Great Miami River. But when it eventually was demolished, it was turned into a large urban renewal area, and now Sinclair Community College is roughly on the spot.
It.
So it kind of comes all full circle for me, because that's where I go to work every day.
Good for you.
But to think about what it must have looked like in the past, it's almost impossible to fathom when you're there today, because it's just been such a radical change.
And you and I were talking, we kind of think maybe, sort of, that Cincinnati's better preserved, maybe, sort of, or not. A little bit?
I think so. It's a bit tough just because it's on a different scale.
Well, we're a much
having been so
city.
Much bigger. But I do think just the amount of neighborhood commercial districts and, you know, not just individual buildings that Dayton's lost, but just whole areas of the cities are basically gone. So I do think that isn't seen on such a scale in a whole lot of other places.
Andrew, will you correct me? Is it the Reibold Building?
Reibold Building, yes.
Dayton's. Thank you, Mike. I'm looking at his book. Thank you, Mike.
You're fine.
Dayton's tallest building. That's kind of a little bit of a sad story, isn't it? Sort of, or it was kind of not taken care of, but it's coming back now or something?
So the Rybold building actually is in pretty good shape
now. Oh, good.
So there's a lot of county archives and different offices there. I actually did some research to try to figure out how old my house was, and those records are kept in that building.
How old is your house? The
main portion of it is 1851.
Okay, tell us about it. Is it frame, brick?
It is brick.
Uh-huh.
But actually, the interesting part of it is
Mike.
There was originally a small frame house built farther back in the property, and then they built this brick house in 1851.
Cool.
But anyway, it was this Rybold building has those records, so that was...
You found that out.
So
how
that
long
was,
did you live there?
Since early 2017.
17. Now, and didn't Abraham Lincoln stop at your house sometime?
He, you know, it's always possible.
Oh, I love that answer. So, what are... another building that we talked about, the yellow brick one that you can see from I-75 with this tall, skinny tower. That was was that the early cement one?
So that's the Center City building.
Oh, I love that building from a distance.
Interesting thing there. It does look great. It's a visible part of Dayton's skyline, very, very noticeable. It was built in three phases, so it used to be a tall, skinny building, and then they put a second half on, and then they connected it and built a tower. And it was one of the... At the time of its completion, it was said to be the tallest reinforced concrete structure anywhere.
And downtown, the Ingalls building was the first, but this one was built shortly afterwards and a lot taller. I'm a lousy driver because I'm on I-75 and I'm bored out of my... I'm looking at all those beautiful buildings you can see there. And then you have that tall, skinny limestone building that's a real Art Deco building. I can't think of the name of it, but you've got some beautiful buildings downtown there. When we come back, let's talk a little bit more. And I think it would be nice, because you write a big part of this about retailing, talking about Reichs in Dayton, and we'll bring up anything else. So you can call us 772-9658 or toll-free 877-772. I'm Frank Farmer-Lumos, along with Mike Martini, Dave Schramm, and our special guest today. I hope you're enjoying him as much as I am interviewing him, Andrew Walsh. Welcome back, everybody. I'm holding in my hand Lost Horizon. Lost Horizon. Lost Daytonian. Lost Dayton, Ohio. Excuse me, Andrew. I'm so sorry about and give us your website again, because this is neat about your website. You're doing a catalog of all historic buildings?
Yeah, so that's a new project I've been doing on my website, which is DaytonVistas.com. And there I've just been publishing shorter history articles, stuff that I researched that didn't make it into the book, or just other little interesting stories I've come across.
That's going to take a lot of work.
It is. So what I started kind of thinking was that I've written about all these buildings, and I've just been curious to cross-reference them or see. I'm curious all the ones in this neighborhood or the ones that were the oldest.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically combined my interests in local history with my librarian background, and I'm like, let's catalog all these buildings. So,
I love that. I love all that, you know, the sites on Facebook. Some of them are malarkey, but the ones about architecture are just great. And I'm holding this book in my hand. How long did it take you to write this?
So from... start to finish, it took me about 2 years from the original idea.
Well, that makes me feel better. I thought you were going to say it took 6 months. That's great, that 2 years.
Yeah, so a lot of research. So
yeah.
I was getting a big stack of books through the OhioLINK system. I was going to some archives at Wright State University, has great archives. The Dayton Metro Library has incredible local history collections. Old newspaper archives. So there's a lot to dig through.
I love it, all you put. And one of the sections, I think maybe it might have been the first one I read, to be honest with you, that made me kind of sad in a way, was tell us about the Reichs building, because that was an incredible store.
Right. So this was right in the center of downtown, the Reichs department store. And one thing that I thought was interesting that came up in actually a couple different chapters, people would say that Reichs store was more of a city within a city and not just a department store. So
right.
It was a place you could get lunch, you could have various entertainment options
people
and this
loved
or that.
It, yeah.
So it was much more than just a place to buy your goods. It was just kind of a beloved destination. And Reichs So it had deep roots in Dayton. So in the mid-1800s, David Reich created a dry goods store with a couple of partners, and they bounced around a few smaller locations, eventually kept growing, and then built this, what was a very beautiful structure, which was right there, right on 2nd Street in Dayton, 2nd and Main.
I wish I'd seen it, darn it.
Yeah, so it lasted only until it was 1999 when it was demolished. But today on that same site, at least you don't see a vacant lot or a parking lot.
Good point.
On its site today is our Performing Arts Center, the Schuster Center, and then a large tower with luxury condos.
I think that one you have pushed here somewhere, you can see that from I-75. I think. No?
You might be able to see the condo tower a little bit from parts
remember,
of it.
Remember, I look. I'm a lousy driver, but I'm always looking at those beautiful buildings. Mm-hmm. So was there any? Did anybody try to save Reich's or anything? No? With the low points?
It was tough. I think it was maybe just the loss of the company that started it all. So you know, retail in general was struggling, particularly downtown. So that, you know, had its roots back in the 50s where suburban malls were starting to spring up. So it was kind of a long, probably demoralizing process as, you know, beginning there were many floors of this store and, you know, the top floors were shut down and then there were only a couple left. And by the end, when it was totally gone, I think everyone kind of knew the writing was on the wall.
We're lucky that the John Shillitoe Company, have you ever been in that downtown Cincinnati?
I don't think I've been inside.
Town Properties did a fantastic job, and when they were restoring, I'm sorry, it was built like 1878. It was such a modern store that Marshall Field came from Chicago with Daniel Burnham to scout for that for building State Street. Anyway, when it had all been roofed over, when they were restoring it, making it into apartments, they had a rotunda like your arcade building. So we got great hope for the arcade building. Tell us what other things are going on that are there's a lot of positive things going on. What else?
Definitely. So I mentioned a little bit earlier the rehabilitation of some of the old Delco factories.
Uh-huh. And those are apartments?
Yes, so there was one project, Delco's first plant. This was just a couple of years ago it opened, and it's beautiful apartments that overlook the ballpark, Fifth Third Field. So this is the Reds' single A affiliate, Dayton Dragons, is one of the hottest tickets in minor league sports. They're always sold out, and it's a great experience. So that's a good thing to do. And that whole neighborhood is known as Webster Station.
Well, that's a nice name. How did it get that name?
I'm actually not positive how it got the name, but it was an old industrial area, and so it has those two Delco buildings, and there's quite a few other older warehouses and factories.
Mendelssohn's is around there, isn't it?
So Mendelssohn's is Delco's second factory.
Okay.
Yeah, so
I like going in there just to see that big elevator.
So Mendelssohn's is this very interesting little bit of everything type of store. You take this very old-fashioned elevator. I think they still have an elevator operator who takes you to the upper floors.
What, if we're driving north on 75, which is it on the east side or 75, the Delco and everything? Is it on the downtown side?
It's on the downtown side.
Okay, so it's not on the Art Museum side.
Right, so it's pretty much just maybe four streets east of Main Street. So it's really greater downtown.
It looks like the area just immediately around the Art Institute there is doing well, too.
Yeah, that's definitely doing well. So that would be the Grafton Hill neighborhood.
Oh, that's got that's a nice name.
And then one thing I didn't get to in the book too much, but that
you got to write another
like
one.
I think I might have. Mike's back.
No, Mike never left.
Well, that's true.
No, never mind. Sorry. Go ahead. I had to make you laugh. Okay.
So in that Grafton Hill neighborhood, there is the main thoroughfare is Salem Avenue, which still is going through some tougher times, but there's a co-op grocery store that is currently it's called the Gem City Market. Dayton's nickname is the Gem City. So it's gotten incredible support. Major companies have made donations. Lots of people have purchased memberships in the co-op.
Good.
So that's really going to do a lot of good, and it's really in an area that would be considered a food desert without a whole lot of healthy foods.
And, you know, when you get off to go to that Dayton Art Institute and the Masonic, that beautiful Masonic temple.
Yeah, that's a great
There's one. A street that's perpendicular to the river, maybe a little bit south of those two buildings, that is yellow brick, And it's and I may be wrong. It's a series of looks like row houses, and they're incredible. Like two. Notice that the next.
So I think that's probably the you know the foot of Salem Ave, which I was just mentioning, just down by
those
the river.
Beautiful town. Oh, I don't know what the right word is. Have you ever seen those, Mike? They're incredible.
I don't know about that.
That I want you to put on your.
Yeah,
website.
I think it's a condo building.
Is it?
But it is an older one.
I want you to put that in your website. So in other words, we can go to your website. And we can order your book, and we can read about. Do you have some buildings already listed and everything?
Right. So in that little catalog I mentioned, I did about 100 buildings so far.
Well, God, that's a lot of work.
And then aside from that, I try to publish just a short article, usually with a historic image, sometimes with a sort of then and now type of feature. Try to do a couple of those a week.
Do you get a lot of comments from people?
Yes, I get some, and it's interesting. It's mix of people who grew up in Dayton who are reminiscing about some of these places, but also I'm trying to reach the audience of people kind of like me who are newer to the city.
Yeah, well,
and then
learning
about this heritage and what's still here and that we can still fight to preserve.
I'm laughing. I'm not making fun of you. I'm laughing because some of these websites, like St. Louis, Historic St. Louis has a great one, and people write these comments on the bottom. Oh, I tied my shoelace in front of that building when I was 6 years. That's why. Do you ever get anything? When I was 6 years old, who cares?
I don't think I've had any. Eccentric. Yeah,
St. Louis has a really nice one like yours. Are you working on another book?
So I've got a few ideas. One, before I came into this lost Dayton theme, I was considering writing a book just about my neighborhood, the Oregon District. So that's another idea. I could go back to that.
That would be neat. We didn't touch on that Biltmore Hotel from the it's just a beautiful building.
Is.
And that's a senior citizens apartment building.
Yep, so it's still in productive use.
Oh, it's
not a hotel anymore.
And then
of course.
You got and then there's what they used to have that YMCA you could see there. Is that still a Y? That's a dynamite look. I've never been there, but it's a dynamite looking building.
I actually was in there to play basketball on Wednesday. So it is a Y.
It's still a Y and it's doing well.
And
how about that?
So the rooming, facilities for the YMCA were converted just into regular apartments in the early 1990s.
That is just a beautiful, and that's sort of, I forget what that river is, but that's a beautiful building, And we went down, when we went to the exhibit at the Dayton Art Institute, there's a lot of infill apartment buildings going in around there, too. Nearby.
And there's a lot of older apartment buildings around there.
Thank you for pointing that out. You're right. Is Dayton, like Cincinnati, more a city that was owned by houses rather than a lot of apartment buildings? Or is it a little mostly either or sort of?
Yeah, traditionally it didn't have as many big apartment buildings.
Okay. I know that there, as you're going north on 75, just a little bit north of the Dayton Art Institute, there's this beautiful courtyard building right near I-70, sort of Spanish-looking. And I want you to write about that one, too. And I'll post a comment. Oh, I tied my shoelace there. Daniel... I want to get this right. Andrew Walsh, you know why I have a friend named Daniel Walsh, so forgive me. Walsh, would you give us where we can find out more and everything about you?
Sure. So probably the best way is just to head to my Dayton website, which is DaytonVistas.com.
All righty. And you've got some upcoming events at the Dayton Public Library.
Yes. So that's the website will be the Dayton Metro Library, DaytonMetroLibrary.org, under the events. They should all be there.
Yeah, I've done talks for them in the past. That's a wonderful organization. And I bet when you go to Kettering, you'll have a mob.
Hope so.
Good. Thank you for driving from Dayton. Thank you for writing this book. I'm Frank Farmer-Loomis, and next week will be Fun Drive. And after that, I'm interviewing an author who wrote about King's embroidery about the fashion district in Paris under Louis XIV. There was no Dayton back then. There was no Cincinnati. Have a wonderful week and take care, everybody.